Future CEOs on cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to Future CEOs. My name is Gareth Armstrong. It's great to be with you. Next to me, the lovely Lubian boy, the ever lovely Lubian boy.
Hello.
Are you doing well today, Lubian?
Spending time with you and learning about businesses and how to scale and pivot and all the good stuff, the bad stuff, but the things that are going to make my business more viable is worth it, Gareth.
I'm really glad to hear that. And you attribute all of that to me, but I'm not going to let that rest with me. Well, it's our guests that really bring all of that quality into studio. What do we do here? We bring senior executives, CEOs, entrepreneurs who are doing really great work, all of these individuals into studio, and we want to learn from them. We want to grow from them. We ask them questions about their journeys. And today is no different. In fact, I think we're honored today. But before we go there, I mean, it's important to understand that this Future CEOs conversation is proudly brought to you by Coronation. Day in and day out, since Coronation started 25 years ago, they never stopped working to earn your trust and make your money work for you. Coronation, trust is earned.
You know what? When I describe profound impact of national debate, when I talk about a media organization with great future, when I talk about a beacon of independent journalism across the continent, what pops into your head?
Oh, obviously Cliff Central,
right? Who and what?
No. That beautiful introduction is for the CEO of the Mail and Guardian, one of the biggest brands in journalism.
Absolutely.
And hard-hitting, ethical, fantastic journalism that we do have here in the country and across the world, in fact. Hussein, you are the CEO of Mail and Guardian here in South Africa. We're so very grateful to have you in studio. Welcome.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, Shlubi, and good afternoon, Gareth, and good afternoon to all your listeners out there. I must say that often I find that when you introduce yourself as a CEO of the Mail and Guardian, everybody responds in the manner that you have just responded
now.
With lots of excitement, and it's sometimes contradicted to what, you know, happens behind the scenes at the CEO level of a newspaper like the Mail and Guardian. But I'm humbled, you know, that you've chosen me to participate in what you're doing. I think it's a really good initiative. So well done on that.
Thank you. Here I am. I would argue that most CEOs probably feel the same way about their organizations, because there's a lot of interesting stuff that goes on behind the scenes all over the place.
Yes.
You've been behind the scenes doing some interesting stuff. You're in the CEO Sleeper. Thank you for doing that.
Yes.
You recently had some new owners. You got some new bosses. That must be interesting.
Yeah, so let me share that with you. You know, the sector has always been a struggling sector, especially over the past three, four years, as print. And I think that as the shift to digital has been happening, the business models have become increasingly difficult to navigate through. And in last year, it became increasingly difficult, and we needed to sort of take some decisions, important decisions in our lives as the Mail and Guardian. What we were all consensus about was that the MG has to survive. It's such an important institution within the South African democracy that we had to do whatever it took to ensure the long-term sustainability of the brand of the paper. And we managed to then bring in the Media Development Investment Fund, a New York-based fund who invests in media across the world in emerging economies.
We must talk about that.
And they play a very important role across the world. And they agreed to up their shareholding in the MNG from 10%, which it originally was, to sort of the majority shareholder now. Mm. And they brought me on board as well as a minority shareholder in the sort of overall. So, and we embarked on a 100-day plan and a 100-day strategy to ensure we bring about better stability into the business and to ensure its longer-term sustainability, which is what we're sort of in right now.
Yeah, I was about to say, so this was in December that this happened, and so you're in the latter end of
correct.
Your 100-day
It feels you're still sort of navigating your way through it, you know, that has its sort of ups and downs, but it's been interesting times. We've learning to discover each other as it goes with new shareholders. But certainly, and I've been doing road shows across the country, visiting agencies, visiting corporates. Mm. And the response really has been awesome.
Mm. You positive, know, from good stuff.
Very, very positive. Yeah. And, you know, it's almost as if, where has the M&G been all these years, you know? And I guess the sort of positive sentiment that is playing itself out across the country right now does help. Mm. I mean, I think that we are seen as a platform that was instrumental in bringing about the change that did occur.
Absolutely.
I mean, the M&G sort of was the platform that broke the Nkandla story way back then. Mm-hmm. The M&G played an important role in breaking the Estina Dairy farm story related to the Guptas, which eventually was the story that led to unearthing all the real stuff that got them to the sort of eyeballs of the prosecution's authority now. You know, so this is what the M&G has always done over the years. Mm. And finally, we feel that we are being recognized for all those efforts. You know, more importantly, about what's happening in the country and the shift that's taking place.
I really,
place.
Truly love to call it, Gareth and Hussein, as ethical
yes.
storytelling.
Correct.
Journalism and impact-focused.
Yes.
You know, but I'd like to go back to the very beginning. Of his journey and your
right.
career.
Yes.
Do take us back.
Right. So I mean, I think that if I were to go back and sort of reflect on how I ended up, you know, getting here, I've got to acknowledge the role that my parents played in my life in the formative years.
You know, where did you grow up? Where are you
from? I grew up in Cape Town, in Athlone, heart of Cape Town. Yeah. I was privileged to be in that my father was a lawyer. And my mom was a teacher.
Wow.
And, you know, they always inculcated a mindset of learning, of reading. Mm. And that helped us, you know. If I reflect back on it, I probably didn't do enough of it. But, I mean, I do recall our Wednesday afternoon routine of visiting the local CNA, you know.
Wow, okay.
And getting magazines, getting books, and sure. So there was a lot of, was it forced perhaps? But it became natural afterwards, you know, and reading Hardy Boys and all those types of books, you know.
That.
And I think that, times were tough, you know, despite them, my mom being a teacher, my dad being a lawyer, they were difficult times, you know. It was, in the 70s, apartheid South Africa, it was difficult, I think, for my father to do what he could. And his peers were Dalo Omar, peers were Issa Musa. Those are the people that he had studied and he grew up with. So I think it was a very academic sort of environment that we felt, but it wasn't easy. You know, it wasn't a privileged environment, you know. It wasn't a lifestyle of fancy cars and fancy houses. It was tough.
It was real. I think
that's right.
Because sometimes these other lifestyles just seem so foreign and so unreal.
Yeah.
You can't get your hands and arms around them.
Yeah.
What I do appreciate about your story is that often parents they and I'm not a parent yet, so right. maybe I'll fall prey to this at some point. But they seem to want to give their children what they haven't had.
Yeah.
When in fact what they should be doing, and it's the best definition of parenting that I ever heard, was that your job is to prepare your child for life.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you have to force some rigorous discipline on them.
Yes.
And what a good job they did if that was their goal.
Yeah, exactly.
Goal.
Yeah, and to your credit to your parents.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, so the natural sort of follow on from there is that when, and I've got two kids, right, is for me to try and replicate what my parents did for me. Mm. For my kids, so that, you know, my kids have a really good grounding. But let me tell you, it's probably the most difficult thing on earth.
Okay.
You know, because life is so different right now, you know. And my kids tell me this. You don't have to tell me this. My kids tell me that life is different now. And one has to adopt a very different mindset in this digital world. You know, I mean, my son, if we were to wake up or go to sleep at night, we'd probably be with a book, or and in the morning, if we wake up, we'd probably all have breakfast together, and we'd be, you know, preparing for school. But so my son, you know, gets all his information off any of his devices, the ones he has access to. And sometimes you'd find him early in the morning watching some video. Now, you'd think it'd be a music video or some cartoon or something. But actually, it's a video all about tech. So all this 13-year-old consumes at the moment is tech, you know, and tech fascinates him completely. You know? So so I don't, you know, get too involved in terms of trying to guide what he then consumes, because I mean, I think that they find it naturally for themselves. It's a very interesting experience. And if I were to tell my mum, who fortunately for me is still alive, what her grandson does at 5 o'clock in the morning, she'd be completely different alarmed. World. You know? She'd say, what are you doing? How are you raising these kids? But so it's a very different, and I suppose every generation has to, as a parent, you adopt different sort of strategies in terms of how you're going to raise your kids. But certainly what my parents did for me at that time worked, you know. And I'm very grateful to them for it.
And then so if we take that and then we fast forward a little bit into your maybe next part of your formation, the formative years of your life.
Yes.
What were your interests? What brings you to be a CEO? So this question of what is the formula, what's the makeup of a CEO? What is in your makeup?
Look, I mean, I think that first of all, I found myself very interested in what is happening out in the business world from a very early age, you know. So my dad used to subscribe to Time magazine, and
I remember getting
the magazine at home and sort of paging through, just sort of picking up interesting you know, snippets out of it. And then as life progressed, I think I actually, and I'll give them a punt, I found Financial Mail very interesting, right? And and it's interesting how one learns to consume different platforms. So in as much as my 13-year-old son finds video as his access into the information world, I found humor as my access to information world. So my first introduction to the newspapers were the comics, right? I used to enjoy the comics, then led me on to reading the sport, and that then led me on to reading sort of what was in the main body of the paper, right? And when I started reading Financial Mail at the time, the first bits that I'd go to were they used to have a humor section right at the back of the Financial, and that was the first, and then I'd go through. So it's interesting to see what attracts people into platforms, and then you get there, and then you sort of get introduced to what is real and where you find your learning. But so I did find my interest in business from a very early age, and naturally, academically, I thought I would become a lawyer, because I did hold the fact that my father was a lawyer and so quite highly. I enjoyed the fact that he was, and I thought that I'd follow in his footsteps. But then an accountant by the name of Mustaq Bray stepped in and spoke to my dad, and he needed someone to come and help him out at a practice that he had established in about the late 80s. I then joined the practice, and that's where I became an accountant.
Are you now a CA?
I'm not a CA. I mean, I followed the entire process. Yes. I served my articles, I studied the degree and everything. But the interesting thing is that so Mustaq then established Brain Associates. He went on to establish one of the first empowerment companies in the Western Cape called Brimstone. And they're a formidable empowerment company even up until today. So these are all the influences that shaped my life, you know, at that age. Sort of then moving away from the law profession, which would have been my natural inclination, becoming an accountant. And that's, you know, that then started or launched my career, my initial sort of experience at serving the articles, to the latter end of it, working a lot with the Cape Town municipality in digitizing all their records. And then, my first job in corporate South Africa was at MultiChoice. And that's when, you know, the whole world kind of then opened up for me.
Kluby, it's so interesting how the different CEOs, but speak different languages, and you develop these languages from when you're quite young, but there are always similarities. Are you seeing all of these similarities here?
Well, definitely similarity if you're going to be the financial manager at MultiChoice and then a financial director at M&G, you know. Correct. So I think that you're very well informed.
Yeah.
I mean, highly educated as well. Yes or no?
Yeah, I think that accounting gives you a very, very solid base, right, for you to be able to get and ensure you understand what the levers are that drive any business, right?
Love that.
The best role for any individual to get into to really understand the business is the finance role, because you know you're not sort of limited to sort of purely just the sales, the marketing, or the editorial function. You get a real good sort of cross section of all the important drivers of the business, and you get to sort of then study them in detail so you can understand what it is and what the cost levers are, and what the impacts are of these different kinds of costs, and what impact they have on revenue generation, which drives the overall business. So it does give you a really good sort of base on which to sort of to move forward here. Yeah.
So we move through all of these positions and you land up in the role of CEO.
Yeah.
How long has it been?
Okay, so CEO now 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go back to day one.
Yes.
What was your biggest light bulb moment as you entered this that office and all the implications of that office?
Yeah. I mean, I think the most important thing is as you move through these various roles is how more and more important people actually become, right?
Love that.
Whereas, you know,
people in relation to what?
Staff, your people, individuals. You know, how more and more important they are. The sort of the higher you progress in any organization. You know, at a very basic level, as a management accountant, numbers are probably important. As you move forward, revenues become important. As you move further up, the bottom line becomes important. When you get to the CEO level, the big light bulb moment is people are most important.
I love that.
Right? Individuals, how individuals react, who the individuals are, who you surround yourself with, how you treat them. Those are the most important issues that you learn and some of the challenges that come with them, you know, they learn to deal with as a CEO. So one would naturally think that that's an HR role. Actually, it's the CEO's role. Yeah, ensure that your people are good people and that you look after them, because without your staff, you are nothing.
Looking after your employees,
absolutely, yeah,
is a better business.
Yeah, yeah.
What should somebody have told you or given advice to you about being a CEO?
I think that,
what were your expectations and what did you get?
Look, I mean, I think the issue of how to, and I've really alluded to the fact that people are really important. Mm. The degree of empathy you have towards individuals and towards people is a really difficult sort of line to navigate, because you know when you are faced with people who have got children, who earn a very low income, but they want to send their children to university. Now, given the fact that I had a slightly better advantage than my parents, you know, drove the fact that I needed to study. For me, I could never say no to helping people with tuition fees. I could never say no. So the big challenge is when to say no. Mm. And not just when to say no to individuals, when to say no to anything in life. Mm. It's a very, very difficult line, a difficult sort of space to be able to navigate your way through. Because when do you say no? When do you take on too much as an individual? When do you take on too many responsibilities? Yeah. When do you take on too much work? When do you sort of, how do you allocate workloads? How do you learn to delegate more? How do you say no to someone who wants a staff loan, right? It's like hard to say no. That is a very difficult line. I mean, like, I know textbook teaches you that. No textbook teaches you the fundamentals. Yes, you can have policies and procedures in place, you know, and it's always easy to sort of deflect to the policy and procedure.
Flack off on them,
that's
correct.
Right, you know, and you could say to staff members, well, look, you know, the policy doesn't allow that. The policy and procedure only allows you to have, you know, a limit of 1 month salary remuneration as staff, and that's where it ends. But when you have someone standing in front of you with tears in their eyes, wanting to send their kids, wanting to get their child to get their university fees, university results, and is unable to get access to the university results because they haven't paid their fees, you know, and this just comes naturally to me, I would go out of my way to try and assist that individual, you know. So, it becomes a very difficult terrain to follow, especially if you start growing your staff base, you know, you're getting flooded, and you've got to be able to find a middle ground somewhere.
Yeah, you have to be able to draw a line.
That's right.
You
where the middle ground is exactly is where it's difficult. Yeah.
Our experience of CEOs here in the studio and out in the world is that often what seems to happen is that they process information sometimes differently to the rest of us. How do you process the no decision? So I don't want this one to drop because it's such an important point.
No, absolutely.
How do you process it?
Look, I think that if I am really unable to assist, I would be honest and declare to the individual who has made the request that, you know, unfortunately circumstances don't allow us to do that, or I'm unable to assist. Or I'll try and go, try and steer them in a direction where they could find some assistance. But I wouldn't, let the individual go without some form of ability to be able to find a solution somewhere. I try and assist to find the solution in some way, shape, or form.
Okay, so I hear two things coming from you. You're talking about an honest approach.
Correct.
Always be honest, but then and always always help them find a solution.
Correct.
Whether that solution lies with you,
that's right,
or not.
Well, yeah.
Always help them find a solution.
Always try and find.
Okay,
solution.
So it's a no and, not a no.
Full stop.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay, no, very nice.
Yeah.
You know what? Those are such highly respectable leadership skills, you're saying. What else do you think leaders need to be successful CEOs, as in characteristics?
Yeah. I mean, I think that I've already spoken about, look, the important issues for me are honesty, integrity, and respect, right?
Mm.
Respect for individuals, respect for cultures, respect. And it's a very broad word, but and simplistically, you know, one could sort of translate that sometimes into just be nice to people.
Yeah.
Right? There's no need for a restaurant owner to admonish his staff in front of everybody else. You know. Take the individual to the back, have the words with him. But I found it distressing when people are rude to their staff in front of me in a restaurant or any work environment. It is that's not the way to do it. So I think that my third, if you ask me, three sort of characteristics would be honesty, integrity, and respect. Yeah.
What's so interesting is that CEO of McDonald's South Africa, Greg Solomon, shared with us once that he uses two ratings, and they're objective ratings to a large extent, or rather subjective ratings, to decide whether or not he wants to pull someone into his team. And the two characteristics that he uses is respect. Do I respect this person? On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do I respect them?
Yeah.
And then the other one is how much on a scale of 1 to 10 do I trust them? Takes those two numbers, multiplies them together,
right.
Gets a very basic rating, but a very good indication of whether or not he wants to actually do business with this person or can do business with this person.
Correct.
So trust and respect.
That's right.
Really, really important.
I think that if you walk the talk, then staff members, individuals naturally become inclined that
Absolutely.
Way too. You know. And I've found many, many environments, you know, where I've interacted with people across the country where the individual is shaped by the sort of characteristic of the leader, you know. And it's always within a junior staff member's ambition to become and to aspire,
of course,
to aspire to be like the leader, you know.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this and smacks of what do certain political leaders, why do they pull certain political levers? Why do they work in a certain kind of way? Because they are influencing to on a mass scale potentially sometimes. Yeah. I mean, I think of the EFF and a Julius Malema and the way that they behave or conduct themselves, appropriate sometimes, yes. Otherwise, other times not.
Correct.
But the influence that this has on so many.
Correct. I mean, I think that, you know, the South Africa that we found ourselves in during the Jacob Zuma era could easily have led us down a really slippery slope. Yeah. In fact, it probably did.
Yeah,
it probably did. You know, and one could only hope and pray that with the change having taken place now. And look, it's a real world out there. So, I mean, I know a lot of what I'm saying sounds good.
Yeah,
right? But
yeah.
Look, it's a harsh world out there.
I know.
Sometimes you have to make hard decisions and you have to retrench staff and you have to shut down divisions and you have to go through some of these sort of trials of life. And one needs to also be able to develop a bit of a thick skin because you are the chief executive and you have to be able to take accountability.
What's been your worst moment? I have to just jump in there as CEO.
I mean, I think that every retrenchment that we've gone through, they've all been really, really tough.
Of course.
Because there are a couple of things. You know, the Mail and Guardian has always been a platform for really good journalism.
Yes.
So one does not easily want to take any action that is going to result in the journalism diminishing
correct.
In this country,
correct.
Right?
Correct.
You always want to ensure that journalism provides a space for opportunity for young, aspiring, you know, students and journalists out there. And you always want to have a platform that they would want to be associated with, right? And it's very, very hard. I found it really extremely difficult to go through retrenchments where you have to tell journalists who are so key to this country's democracy that they no longer have employment. And the issue that the journalism schools speak about and dumbing down of newsrooms and that type of thing could easily happen when you sort of lose some of the institutional mindsets of the journalists that do or have existed in our country, and there are many of them, you know, many journalists who wrote and were journalists to the core, and talk about individuals with high degrees of ethics and responsibility in terms of the way they've reported matters,
correct.
You know, to now know that they are without jobs is a very difficult sort of pill to swallow for me. And I've always, and I think that possibly one of the areas where I've fallen short, this is contradictory, but I mean, the point is, I sort of hold myself accountable to this, is the fact that we have not been able to ensure that the commercial side of the platforms have been successful enough to ensure that there's been a growth, or there've been more opportunities for journalists in this
but
country.
It's always been a hard sector to fulfill that economic
correct.
Sense for the employees.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's always been a difficult sector.
So I think that we've always, as the MEG, leaned towards, foregoing some of the profits. You know, foregoing margin. For the purpose of ensuring that journalism survives, you know, and at some point we had to sort of make some harsh calls, but I don't think the MNG is ever going to be there to make anybody enormously wealthy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just not what the MNG is all about.
Yeah.
The MNG is there to ensure that there is this platform for thought, platform for debate,
you know, debate.
Platform for voices to be heard, platform for young voices to be heard in this country, you know. And I think that if we can ensure if we can ensure the MEG survives for that, then we've done a good job, you know. It's not here for the dividend.
Yeah. I want to be a subscriber now.
You're obviously doing a good job here.
You're sitting with the CEO, yeah?
Let's do, because as time meanders from away from us here, and it's moving meandering quite quickly.
Yes.
Let's do some quick fire questions.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah, sure.
So, if you would please finish this sentence. As CEO, my highest priority every day is to ensure
that our people have provided an enabling environment for our people to flourish.
An enabling environment for your people to flourish and excel. Very nice.
Yeah.
What has been the best advice you ever received?
Learn to say no. Mm-hmm. And study. Learn. If you have an opportunity to improve yourself, whether you are 21 or whether you are 65, you know, take advantage of the opportunity and go and learn.
Do you empower yourself?
Well, before I get there, I just say that I am a very religious person, and I'm a Muslim, and you know, one of the first words of the Quran that was revealed was this word Ikra, which means read. Ikra.
Mm. Ikra.
Right. Ikra, which means read. Mm. And I mean, and that's so true into all sort of aspects of society that one sort of then, you know, whether you're as you progress through life, it's so important to read, it's so important to learn.
Okay, so on that note of reading, what is a book that you would recommend to our future CEOs community?
So I think the book that has had a huge impact on my life is a book called The Road Less Traveled by Scott Beck. Right. Okay. Because as you navigate your way through the book, it really gets you to get to the root of who you are, the real sort of inner sense of who you are, because it talks about the issues of discipline, of your psychological well-being, your theories in terms of life, your religion, your spiritual, it's all these real core elements that make up who you are.
The makeup again.
That's right. Like so and it gets to the real heart of that, you know. And as you've progressed through the book, it really kind of strips you bare of everything and makes you realize the individual that drives who you are, you know. And as you just said, wow! Now you put down sort of every chapter in that book, and you say to yourself, wow! And you reflect, and you actually want to go back and read it again. So I think that has really been a book that has played a huge role or helped me, you know, along in terms of my journey.
I appreciate that a great deal, because we do hear that there's a certain self-awareness and a certain opportunity for self-reflection that advances this idea of self-awareness.
Yeah.
And the more you understand yourself, certainly within a team environment, certainly as a leader of a team, a CEO, the more you can push that team to be the best that they can be, understanding your own weaknesses.
Emotional intelligence.
To be able to read people.
Absolutely.
To be able to
understand,
to be able to understand when the individual is not at their best.
Absolutely.
To understand what is it that is causing them distress.
Absolutely.
And the other part of it also is the ability to be able to predict an outcome.
Mm.
You know, by developing that emotional intelligence, you can, in the form of a discussion, almost predict where something is going. And you could then have the ability to steer it in a different direction, a direction that you really wanted to go into. So,
Hussein, as you say that, I'm disappointed we can't delve into some of the skills that you've developed, the ability to read people as best as we could. We're going to have to then have you back in studio to talk about some of that, because we are running out of time. A final question, a 30-second answer from our side is, if you could go back in time and we ask everyone that comes through that door, this question. If you could go back in time and talk to the young future CEO what is that one piece of advice that you would give yourself?
Be ambitious, but don't chase the money. You know, as a young 20-year-old, 21-year-old, focus on the learning, focus on the academics, don't chase the money. Find a way of, you know, if you need the income, study part-time. There are many, many platforms available now, but continue learning. Mm. I think that really is important.
Very nice. Thank you.
That was the CEO of Mail and Guardian, Hussein Karjika. In his words, Ikra, learn, read. What a fascinating conversation from a media organization with a great future. Gareth, anything to say?
No, I think that was a really, really well-rounded conversation. You pulled us through everything so well. Thank you for joining us in studio.
Thank you very much for hosting me.
Thank you so much, Hussein. That was Feature CEOs proudly brought to you by Coronation. Ups, downs, good days, bad days. Since Coronation started 25 years ago, through the highs, the lows, they work every single day to make your money work for you. Coronation, trust is earned.
A lot can happen in a day. A lot has happened since the day Coronation started 25 years ago. The first democratic election in 94, rugby champions in 95, two Nobel Peace Prize winners, one Indomitable Nkosi Johnson, but there was also the 2008 crash and global recession. Then, what a day when we kicked off the World Cup. South Africans united, we pushed on and believed.
Unbelievable.
From the day Coronation started, through the highs and the lows, we worked every day to earn your trust and make your money work for you. To invest your money today, visit coronation.com. Coronation. Trust is earned. Coronation is an authorized financial services provider and approved manager of collective investment schemes.
Future CEOs on cliffcentral.com.